you don't read the newspaper, you're uninformed. If you do read it, you're misinformed. What is the long-term effect of too much information?
Information, information, I just need some information. I've been dying, is it lack of education? I've been reading without any transformation. I'm addicted, is it overstimulation? Hey.
Welcome to the Sixth Sense Report.
Hear ye, come on. You are listening to the Sixth Sense Report with Joel Nikoloff and Darnell Samuels.
That's not Darnell. Who are you impersonating?
Impersonating? Man, tonight the Colorado football team is playing Colorado State. So for those of you who don't know, Colorado is coached by the man, the myth, the legend, Deion Sanders. Deion Primetime Sanders. And so the controversy is...
He's the one they made the song about?
What song?
I wear my sunglasses at night.
Oh, no. No, well, probably now, but the coach of the Colorado State team, Jay Norville, he took some shots at Primetime for wearing his glasses and his hat at the press conference and speaking to adults. And he says, hey, I was raised the right way, where you take off your hat and your sunglasses when you speak to adults.
So you're here showing solidarity for Deion.
Yeah, solidarity, right? solidarity with the homie Primetime. And so he bought sunglasses for his whole team and the whole media. And so they're about to play tonight. So this is gonna be too funny, but so I was like, okay, let me rock the glasses to show that I'm rocking with the Colorado football team.
Good. I like it a lot, man.
yeah. How you doing, good. Joel?
Man, I'm doing good. I'm back to, you know, this comfortable chair doing our thing. And yeah. It's a topic that I don't know, I've probably been ranting and raving about for a long time, even on and off the podcast. So mm-hmm. I'm excited, not just because we're talking about this topic, but I think we're on the brink of some real change, and mm-hmm. hopefully this documentary and what it's highlighting is showing that change is coming.
Yep. Good. Yeah. So like, we haven't addressed this healthcare issue before, have we?
I mean, not directly. Like, I think it's definitely probably come up. It's an easy comparison with America, but I don't think we've really hashed it out. You know, we never really talked about how it's funded in Canada or any of those kind of things.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I've probably definitely taken some pot shots at it, you know, here and there, because it's an easy target. Our healthcare sucks.
Other than
what it costs your pocket.
But. Yeah. So let's get into it. So, okay, for the listeners, we're going to address three things. What's wrong with Canada's healthcare system? And then the second one is we're looking at the alternatives, Sweden's system and America's system, comparing the two. And then the last point is universal healthcare a human right?
And so, for the audience, the you know, pref, like the catalyst for this episode is a documentary from Aaron Gunn, part of his, I think it's called Politics Explained series. And so the documentary is called Waiting to Die, Canada's Healthcare Crisis. It's about an hour and 10 minutes long. That you know, a lot of the issues we're going to touch on are probably teased out a little bit further in his documentary. So I definitely recommend watching it, especially if you appreciate the conversation we're having.
Mm-hmm. Good. All right. So without further ado, what's wrong with our system? What's wrong with our system, Joel?
Haha. What's wrong with it? It's a socialist system with just running its course, actually. And so, you know, the good old saying, you run out of other people's money. While, you know, there might be, you could always say, oh, just put more money in the system. I think the biggest issue is just this, in my opinion, blind adherence to socialism all the time. Nothing else is an option. It's I think politics and the political atmosphere and sort of the blind sort of idolatry towards our system is a huge part of the problem, because it just hasn't changed. Mm-hmm. And everything, you know, just look at any technology, look at any system, you know, the systems that don't change eventually collapse. And I think a simple example of that would be Uber, or with regards to taxi, right? The entire taxi cartel system largely, it didn't totally collapse, but it drastically changed overnight because they refused to change, or the system became so entrenched in protecting those that came before and preventing new entrants and innovation, such that the market eventually had a significant shift. And so I think that's where the Canadian system is finding itself. Failure to adjust, you know, government bureaucracies largely prevent change. And so unless people are going to look at themselves and intentionally create change and maybe give up some power and influence at the same time, then things would change. But I think as we go through the conversation, we'll see things like the unions and public health authorities, their desire to maintain power and influence and control and status quo is a huge reason why we're in the situation we're in. So I sort of spoke to particulars of structure without speaking to, let's call it, the symptoms. I mean, maybe I'll come back around to some of those after, you know, you give your two cents on what's wrong with Canada's healthcare system.
Yeah. So I think it's just two issues. The lack of doctors, right? I think the stat was 6.5. Is it? Let me just double check. 6.5 Canadians. I think it's 6.5. I'm not sure what that said. I forgot what that 6.5 is. But there's a lot of Canadians out there who don't have their own doctor, right? Their own family doctor. I don't have one. My doctor retired. And it's been super difficult to find a family doctor. So I've just been going into walk-ins. And then the second one is our wait times. And, you know, we all... Any Canadian,
everybody knows. Everybody in Canada knows.
But everybody has one of those stories where, like, look, man, I was in there for 8 hours. I got in there right at 12 at night, and then I got seen at 8 a.m. type of thing, for whatever the case may be. The wait times are really long, and then trying to book an appointment to see a specialist is also long, and that's a problem.
Yeah, the referrals is so I think. I don't know if I wrote it down, but I think it was something like, oh yeah, okay. So we are, you sort of touched on this, but the documentary highlights that Canada, out of the 28 countries that have universal healthcare system, Canada ranks second highest in spending as GDP, as a percentage of GDP, mm-hmm. and eighth highest spender per person, just, you know, pure dollar perspective. Right. Again, per person. So Canada's really, really high. It's literally the bottom five, let's say, in all of the metrics. So number of ICU beds, number of beds, number of MRI machines. So a number of metrics, Canada's just at the bottom of the barrel. And so whether that's, you know, beds per person, all of these things lead to essentially a lack of resources means we pay in wait times. And I think I had it. It's essentially like most, let's call it tests. You have like a month wait time. I'm so rattled. I can't see it if it's in my list, but it was something like to get an appointment with like a practitioner was insane in the wait times, like something like minimum of 6 months or 3 to 4 months minimum. Just to get a referral, right? And that's, think about, like, the referral is step one of you doing something outside of your primary healthcare practitioner. So, the Canadian system, under-resourced, understaffed, everything is, and when we say under, it's the solution in my mind. Everyone goes, well, it just needs more money. No, it's not that simple. I've demonstrated to you, we are high on the spending side, low on the quality side. there's clearly a structural problem.
Right. Okay. So what about the alternatives now?
Well, the documentary does a really good job of highlighting this private American style healthcare as this boogeyman that many of the socialist leaning politics type, you know, throw out there as like private, any private means we're doing American healthcare. And like, it's just either, I love this, I got this from someone else, they're either dumb or they're lying. Like, I'm tired of politicians like giving them the benefit of the doubt. When they say stuff like this, you got to go, are you dumb or are you lying? Because to say privatized healthcare looks like, oh, any sort of bringing in privatized looks like American style healthcare. No, we don't want American style healthcare. And that's nothing like an American style healthcare. And the whole point is, take the other 28 countries that you have some level of universal healthcare system. Guess what? Canada's the only one doing what we're doing, which is private only, illegal, basic, like straight up illegal to buy services privately. And they gave the documentary gave this amazing, amazing example to demonstrate this. Cosmetic surgeries are not illegal, but as soon as the surgery qualifies as healthcare, it's illegal to pay for it. They gave you the example of a mole. Let's say you have a mole that you think you don't like the way it looks and you want to get it removed. No problem paying for that service. But if that mole is concerning to you that it could be cancerous, it's now illegal to pay, and you must stand in a queue hoping that you don't die from your potentially cancerous problem.
Mole. Yeah, no, so, I thought that was very profound.
So what else on the alternative side that this documentary highlighted for you did you find interesting?
Well, they also looked at Sweden's model, and they have private and public, and that the private healthcare system actually is funded by the government. So if people aren't satisfied with what the government's providing, then they can go and into an alternative healthcare system or healthcare option. And I thought that was pretty interesting. What did you think of this system?
I agree. And this is where my comment comes about, you know, private equals American, because these other universal healthcare systems have private integrated, and many of the other countries do. But Canada, so this idea of like Canada needs to try something else. The documentary had, again, I'm stealing so much from the documentary because I've listened to it probably like five times leading up to this. But there's this line that's like, I don't want the American style. I want the best from all the other systems, right? Like, what other systems are out there? What are the best parts of them?
Right.
And they all, to your point. So in Sweden, they gave the example, I think in Stockholm, there's six hospitals,
six of them.
Five of them are publicly funded, publicly run. One of them is publicly funded, privately run.
Right.
And Sweden basically changed their laws, I think, in the 90s. And it's really interesting. And I'll just touch this. We can come back to it on the healthcare right side.
Yeah, for sure. Go ahead.
But the point was, they changed their law by making it a right, in some sense, that you got the healthcare within 90 days.
Really?
So the problem with Canada's healthcare system is you have access to universal healthcare, but timeline is irrelevant. As soon as timeline is beyond 90 days, you have the right to get public funds to pay for your private healthcare.
If it goes over 90 days.
If the wait time is over 90 days, you can go anywhere you want. Again, I have to go into specifics a little bit more, but essentially the way that a big part of their change in the 90s for the Swedish system, they increased capacity, lowered wait times, lowered costs by adding private components. Now, they do also have a very small component that is privately funded, privately run. And there's a line from France that I think most socialists fail to comprehend. And that is, when people choose to pay out of their own pocket, they remove the burden on the public purse and public system.
Sorry, say that again.
When you choose to pay for it, your healthcare privately, you've now removed the burden from the government system.
Right.
So now the public system for people who can't afford to pay for it themselves has less wait times, in essence, because there's less people needing healthcare.
Right.
But and you've increased capacity of the entire system and at a lower cost. And this is based on the experience in Sweden, and but the point was in France, the guy quoting it was making this comment. France understands that when people choose to use private healthcare, they remove the burden from the public system, freeing up resources in the public system.
Wow. That's, man. And see, and that's efficiency, and that's what we need, right?
So there's one little, well, I shouldn't say little. There's one additional piece that almost all the other countries have made a change on that Canada hasn't.
What's
and
that?
That's the funding model. So the funding model in Canada is basically like, here's your annual budget. Here's your pool of money. Run your hospital. As opposed to a funding model, and again, this makes more sense. It makes sense that they're doing that model in the current system when there's only one provider, i.e. government. But when you have a system that's a little bit more mixed, they use activity-based funding. So you get funding based on the complexity of the care that a patient needed, not just, in essence, that makes the customer a revenue generator, but in the other system, the customer's a cost generator. So I actually want to service less customers because it lowers my costs. But we want a system that incentivizes faster, more higher quality, and higher number of patients. Right? And so this is where these are two things that Canada's doing, i.e., you know, only public, no private, mm-hmm. for the most part. Again, private being part of the universal is sort of the point.
Right.
As well as the way we do the budgeting. So those two things are this sort of goes back to the first question, you know, what's wrong with Canada's healthcare system? Those two things are what's are the biggest drivers for long wait times and lack of resources. Because private competition increases innovation inherently.
Right. Right. So then, so I guess ethically speaking, morally speaking, the way Canadians usually look at it is that it is morally right, it is a human right to have universal health care. What would you say to that?
I don't know. That requires slavery.
Yeah, this guy says slavery. Yeah, let me take my glass off. This man just said slavery. He just said the magic word. Let me take my glasses off.
Okay, so if you are entitled to health care and you have no money to pay, mm-hmm. are you not forcing someone else's labor to do the work for you?
What do you mean?
Who's going to give you the healthcare? Slaves.
Who are the slaves?
Like you're compelling somebody to work for you.
Mm-hmm. The taxpayer?
Again, you're compelling them, right? This is the point. By calling it a right, mm-hmm. the point is that you're making it so that you must treat them. Well, who's paying for it? So I'm using the example that person's not getting paid. You're just forcing them to work so that mm-hmm. you can receive the health care. Now, what we do is we put the government in the middle and go take money and give money. But on the substance of your compelling labor with no compensation for the labor when you mm-hmm. call this thing a right. So in order for you to execute the right that you're deeming, it requires slavery, i.e. the only way I can give you free healthcare with no burden of cost of the employee who's going to execute would be if that employee's cost was free. When does that happen? Under slavery. So yes. I'm being a little bit ridiculous. I'm being a little over top to make the point that mm-hmm. this is the problem with the way we've started defining rights. As soon as something you call a right compels someone else to act on your behalf. Not, this goes back to the conversation we've had on a recent episode that's coming out, but also many episodes, the idea of a negative versus a positive right. Mm-hmm. Right? The negative right prevents them from harming me because my negative rights are essentially being violated. A positive right compels others to do something for me. And my argument, and I'm being a little ridiculous, I understand. But what I'm doing is drawing it to its logical conclusions. The only way you can have positive rights is to compel people's work. Compelling people's work is, in essence, slavery. Again, I've already explained why I'm being a little ridiculous with that comment, but I don't think it's that far removed or that ridiculous of a line to draw.
Right. Right. It's funny because when I was watching the documentary, and they were talking about how the public health care, right, it just wasn't working. And so now you have people funding, the government's funding the health, the public system, and there's no incentive to treat patients, but more so the incentive is on making sure that they're budgeting the money that they're getting. So the priority isn't necessarily the patients, but it is managing the funds that they're getting from the government. But they were saying in the public system, or in the private system now, because the doctors are getting paid by the customer, they're taking care of the customers, where the customers become more of a priority in the public system, in the private system, sorry, rather than the public.
Yeah. And that's the comment, that's the alignment with this activity-based funding, right? Because in the simplest sense, it's a commercial transaction. A customer, patient, is buying services and they're getting, services rendered. But when you don't view it that way, because your funding model perverts the natural incentives, you get what we have in Canada.
Right. And that's why it becomes a moral issue, where you're like, okay, well, what if, especially when it comes to people's health, right? Well, all of us have been sick and we've been in the hospital and we want to be treated. And even as I was watching it, I felt very sad for just people in general. Cause like, you know, we've all spent time in the hospital. If you haven't, man, you know, thank God you haven't, you know, yep, been in the hospital for some kind of surgery or you were sick. But this is something that's serious, and we want to be treated. Like those cases where people had to wait so long and died because they were waiting for a surgery or a treatment. And so
the documentary unfortunately did a good job. I say unfortunately.
Yeah, because
highlighting a few of those cases.
Yeah, because it's crazy, because here we are trying, you know, the sentiment of universal health care is good. Everybody gets a shot at it, and that's good. We want to take care of people, but the reality is everybody's lining up to get this free healthcare. For those who are listening, they can't see me doing my
quotation marks,
scare quotes. Yeah. Yeah. But, scare quotes that, free healthcare. Well, if it's people are going to line up and take advantage of it, and people are going to be left on the outside waiting in line. And so now, is it really helpful?
Well, and I think, you know, this is where the reason I brought up that 90-day thing for the Sweden was because universal healthcare that doesn't give you access to the healthcare, is it really universal? Like, it's universal in that everybody gets to use it equally. And this is where socialism is really showing up here, because as much as they say we don't want the American style healthcare, what they're really saying is that we want everyone to be treated exactly the same. Mm-hmm. The problem is they're lying to you again. Guess what? In the documentary, I didn't know this, but there is a select group of people who are exempt from being illegal.
That's right.
Prisoners and federal employees. So right. Prisoners and federal employees can pay for healthcare within your own province, which, again, another crazy thing that documentary highlighted. You could fly to another province and pay for healthcare, but you can't stay in your own province and pay for healthcare.
Which is wild.
The documentary showed someone who's like, yeah, I had three patients from Alberta, and my colleague had three patients from BC, and we were both operating them on the same time. It would have been much more efficient if those people didn't have to fly.
Right.
Because the three people were from BC in Alberta and vice versa. So, I mean, it's, again, politicians, the guy on the documentary is like, anyone who knows me can get health care. It's only the poor and the middle class who are stuck in the wait lines. Mm-hmm. So we've already got a two-tiered system. He's like, we got 50 tiers. Forget two-tiered. So, I mean, again, I highly recommend this documentary. I think it's highly valuable to just gain a lot of perspective on the Canadian system. And what the true alternatives are out there. Because I think you know, I probably was a little bit ignorant as to what the options are for universal healthcare. But I know, I'm pretty sure we've talked about this before. And that is the thing we haven't mentioned in, it wasn't mentioned in his documentary. We didn't mention it here. Sweden's model, if I understand it correctly, has the customers paying like 20% of the actual cost. And so this is what does make sense when you have a revenue-based, or sorry, an activity-based funding model. You need the customer to have a little bit of skin in the game because this prevents overconsumption of resources.
Right.
Right. So if I know that three tests are going to cost me $300 and I only really need one and I only have to pay $50 for the one, I'm only going to pay one. But if they're free, I'm just going to do them all. And so right. Now it's left to the doctor to decide or pick and choose. And again, you have some perversion of incentives. If you don't, again, this goes back to what I started with. Perverting incentives, I'm talking about what's the basic customer, supplier, or producer relationship. Because what happens is normally I pay, and if you don't give me good quality, I don't pay you again. And if I'm unwilling to pay, the service provider says, no, sorry, I can't do it at that low of a cost.
Right.
So there is this natural relationship between cost and value being created that occurs. But when you remove those natural incentives, i.e. screw you, your product sucks, I'm going elsewhere, or you're not willing to pay me enough money for the services you want, I can't do everything you want. When you pervert those incentives, this is what leads to overconsumption and over deterioration of resources in poor ways, right? Mm-hmm. It's the common, I can't remember the term right now, but it's like the idea of public space being commonly used, everyone overconsumes it.
Right.
Nobody puts back into it.
Tragedy of the commons?
That's the word I'm looking for. Thank you. So, finishing up, I think, unless you got something else specific.
No, that's good.
What's your two cents on the topic? What do you want to leave the listeners with? I'll check my notes to see if there's anything I missed for my two cents.
It's just when it comes to this universal healthcare, it's not working. Good intentions don't always lead to good outcomes, right? I think that's the heart of it. You look at organizations like Samaritan's Purse, which is a Christian organization that Christians can dip into and use to help others who are in need. And yeah, well, especially is really big in the US for their system. But I think it's important to help people. It's important to help people, but I think we have to do it ourselves rather than get other people to do it for us or force other people to help. I think the universal is great, but we definitely need diversity with a private system as well. And I think part of it is we have to show the moral argument to help Christians and Canadians understand that it's important. What about you?
Yeah, I think I do want to highlight a couple of things that the documentary touched on that we didn't quite hit. So I found the point. Average wait time for a referral is 27 weeks. And basically a month plus for diagnostic tests, which is what we already touched.
Yikes.
SecondStreet.org did a study that said since April of 2018, 40,000 people have died on a wait list. And the way the documentary was talking about this, this wasn't people who were like, oh, their life would have been extended by 33 weeks or 6 weeks or 6 months by what they were getting. It was like the documentary highlighted people specifically who were like ready to go with what they needed and just didn't get the treatment in time because they were on a wait list. So like, oh, I've got approved as a donor. The donor's there. I just don't have a bed to do the operation. So, And I think I saw something from Six Buzz that came out today that was like 10,000 people died on a wait list in the last year.
Mm.
Maybe it was 11,000. So the other big thing that we didn't touch on that was really sort of depressing, people on the wait list, we fail to recognize that a lot of time they're living with significant pain. And consequently, we're getting a rise in people using MAID who are on wait lists.
Sorry.
Because they can't.
What's MAID?
Medical assistance in dying. So assisted suicide by doctor is essentially being used for people who are on wait lists. right. and they can't deal with the pain any longer. And you know, an example that they use in the documentary that I wouldn't have thought of was like a hip replacement. Because the hip, while you're waiting for a hip replacement, you're in agony. You get the hip replacement done, you're no longer in pain. But while you're in pain on your wait list, you're getting addicted to drugs, painkillers. So again, another layer to this problem that we don't see as more than like, oh, they just have to wait time, just time.
Yeah.
And then the last one you sort of touched on it is a big problem in Canada is sort of our resources both going to the States, right? So like the American model for the manner in which they do nursing was what this documentary highlighted that I thought was interesting. So like between unions and the bureaucracy of a system here, nurses are really not incentivized to excel. Whereas like you go to the States and like they want you to work hard. They reward you for working hard. High quality work is valued. So like amount of Canadians that live in Windsor and travel to Detroit for healthcare, because it's the environment that they work in is so much better. Mm-hmm. And this is where the documentary I thought did a good job of highlighting using, there's a private clinic in Quebec. So we do have some private stuff popping up because provinces are like, we're screwed if we don't do anything.
Yeah.
So Quebec is the leading the charge on this in terms of bringing in some stuff.
Okay.
What was interesting was the talk about the ability for a private system to more appropriately accommodate, let's call it abnormal working. So the with between unions, which basically are like, you must give our, you know, this happens in a number of places, not necessarily, I don't know for sure in nursing, but a lot of times unions will be like, no, you can't make us work split shifts. No, you can't give us half days. We must get full 8-hour shifts per day.
Right.
And what ends up happening though, is that creates this very narrow box of types of working schedules. And so someone who's like, you know what, I only want to work 25 hours a week. I'm like close to retirement. I can't handle very burdened, stressful 40 hours, must do overnights, that the unions are trying to cultivate for more benefits to their members. The problem is when the benefit to the member is non-pay or non-quantifiable in terms of work, the system, they just end up leaving the system. Or they retire early and go do another job working 30 hours a week.
Right.
So we've got these qualified resources that are not in healthcare, either due to burnout. I think the documentary said something like 94% of nurses report being burned out at some point.
Oh, man.
So the private system in Quebec is like, we have not hired a single person from public. They're all either retired or no longer working. Then they come back because we can give them better working conditions. Mm-hmm. And so this is why I sort of touched on public health and unions being part of the problem, because they're the manner in which we do healthcare needs to change. And these systems and or institutions are holding on to the power that they have in the current system. And they don't want the current system to change, because that means relinquishing power, relinquishing influence. Maybe ununionized staff have to come in because they don't want 4-hour shifts working 20 hours a week. But people who basically want that can't work.
Right.
So all that to say, there's so many symptoms and cracks in our current system. And really, it's just that our entire system needs an overhaul. You need to be willing to blow things up and rebuild them, redo them. And ultimately, I think if we let, like, we have a system that's technically supposed to be provincially, or for our American listeners, state run. As opposed to federally run. And our federal government is playing games, right? Like there was an issue with like the two provinces that brought in private healthcare systems. The federal government cut transfer payments to them, even though that's a provincial jurisdiction.
Really?
Yeah. They basically punished them for not being socialists, even though it's not their jurisdiction. Obviously they have control over the transfer payments, because that's moving money between provinces. But the whole point was that it's the province's jurisdiction to determine how to give out healthcare. And they started doing, I think it was Alberta and Quebec, but I'd have to double check the provinces that basically the government cut their transfer payments because they were doing private healthcare or incorporating private healthcare. So there, again, I just bring these things up. I know it's supposed to be my 2 cents, but it was like so many little things that documentary highlighted that just I found really insightful, really informative. Again, I say it, go check out the documentary. More than anything, my two cents is Canadian healthcare sucks balls. I mean, I largely have opted out more than anything. I don't go to my primary care doctor because, I mean, COVID's demonstrated she's not someone who I can trust. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. I basically go to a walk-in clinic that opened up near me. I know that they're accepting new patients. I'm literally looking to move my family there because
where?
It's literally around the corner from my house. I mean, so is my primary care doctor. That's not going to help you up in Brampton. Sorry. Mm-hmm. But I mean, there are some clinics popping up. You see the odd one, but for the most part, as you've sort of hinted at, you probably have way more people needing new practitioners because of retirements and whatnot. And then obviously just think about the growing population, right? With immigration and everything that Canada's got. You know, we need a new system that we don't have. We have a huge brain drain, is what we've been sort of talking about. The amount of people that leave Canada to go elsewhere, to get paid more money, to go. These are all problems that they just want to pretend like, oh, we just have to make the public system more robust.
Right. Yeah. Boy.
It's like the system was good and robust 30 years ago when you started it. Yeah. And this is what the documentary highlights again. It was basically like when we had our Medicare experiment starting, which is the universal healthcare system, the way it is now. I think they basically said it, the way it is now is started in the 70s. And at that point in time, everything was fine. The number of doctors per people, number of beds, all these things were good metrics. And we've just continued this steady decline. And guess what the anomaly is? We're the only one without private healthcare in private providers integrated into the system.
Right. No, it's unfortunate, but you know, all we can do is pray for our system and continue to share this, you know, knowledge and this episode.
Yeah. This episode. And pray for your family members when they're on a wait list.
Yeah. Let us know what you guys think about our healthcare system, or was there points that we missed? Did you watch the documentary? Did you think the documentary was spreading fake news? Because you know it could happen. But let us know what you guys think. You know how to contact us, sixthsensereport@gmail.com. You know where to find us on social media.
Sixth Sense makes change.
But you heard me. Does that make sense?
Madden and Mitchell Media.